pass filter, high pass filter, band pass filter, band reject filter. There's all kinds of very fancy, inexpensive, simple circuits with resistors and capacitors. A couple of those feedback with an op amp or two op amps. You can make very fancy circuits with op amps. K2UPS, where are you located? And what would you like to talk about tonight, Rich? K2UPS, K2RIW in the tech net.
Good evening, Tim. Good evening, John. And Wes is out there also, and another station, Walter, on EchoLink. I'm in Pennsylvania right now, on the Pennsylvania Turnpike near Bedford, Pennsylvania. Probably about midway across the state, I guess. About 140 miles in from the Ohio border. So I was listening to the tech man, and I stopped at a truck stop, wanted to get some coffee. Came out, and it was nothing. So I found you guys over here. I've just been listening for a little while, and I wonder if either of you had ever come across a book. I'm going to suggest that Rich get it, N2EL, called Turn Left at Orion. It's a really, really good basic introductory course or book in for astronomy, and what I like about it is it teaches you the basic constellations that anybody can find, like Orion, and then how to use each constellation as a stepping stone to find other ones in the sky. So once you start to learn your way around, you can just look up and you can find the stuff very easily. Great book. I don't know what the author is offhand, but it's called Turn Left at Orion. Back to you, Dick.
N2XJN.
Okay, Wes recognized N2XJN. Yes, I think it was Dave, N2ATG, who first brought that particular book to my attention, Turn Left at Orion, and he liked it very much. Don't know whether I've got a copy of that one. One of my favorite books that gives you a lot of information about astronomy is called Baker, B-A-K-E-R, and I think it's called Introduction to Astronomy. And my guess is that the book is in at least 9 editions, and I've got edition number 9, which has got some very nice illustrations. I've seen some of the earlier editions, edition 4 or 5. I think I've got that one also. But the edition, the illustrations are not quite as nice looking, not quite as many, not quite as looking. So Mr. Baker seems to realize that man is a very visual animal, and so his later editions have better and better illustrations, better and better diagrams, better and better pictures of the stuff you're really looking at. And so two very good books. And as you heard me say earlier, when it comes to one of these rotatable plastic star charts. There's a 16-inch diameter one sold by Borders. Is it Borders? No. the main bookstore. You know what I'm talking about. Barnes & Noble. It's called Guide to the Stars. I think it's around $19 or so. Very well done. But the fact that it's 16 inches in diameter gives you a nice big view of what you're looking at in this thing called Guide to the Stars. I recommend that. Okay, Wes is going to say all of the above. And so, by the way, one quick question for you first, Rich. I wonder if you've ever worked with any operational amplifiers. And if not, I recommend them. They've got a lot going for them. K2UPS in Bedford, Pennsylvania. K2RIW in the TechNet.
Okay, Dick. Now, I've never personally worked with them before. I know what they are and to some extent how they function, and they're great little devices. You can use them for many, many different things. Pretty cool little circuits, but I haven't had any personal experience using them myself. Wes, over to you.
Well, in regards to the question that was about plasma, what I would like to say is that if you have electric current flow in the conductor, you have this balance because the electrons are being taken out from the outer shell. Now, plasma is an ionized gas, so it's a different state than the electric current flow. So if you want to have a distinction between an atom that is in form of ions, because it doesn't have an even number of protons and electrons, you've got to have to have a distinction between plasma and electric current. So I'm listening.
When current flows through a gas, because you created a spark gap, so to speak. The fact that current flows means there are conducting particles in there. Therefore, without a doubt, there are some electrons flowing in one direction and probably positive charged ions in the other direction. In other words, those electrons had to come from somewhere. The molecules that those electrons came from are now positively charged. They're going to move in the other direction. So I'm led to believe that whenever current is flowing through a gas, it is a plasma. It is an ionized gas. And so in that particular case, I don't see how you can get an imbalance. In other words, if three of the molecules each gave up one electron, and I've got three free electrons, then I've got three molecules that are lacking an electron. So the amount of positive charge of each is exactly equal to the negative, the amount of negative charge of the electrons that I removed. I started off with a balanced gas in this closed container of my neon light, and now I made the voltage go high enough so that current is flowing through the neon gas. In that particular case, I think I've got a balanced ionized gas. It's not imbalanced, although maybe we call imbalance meaning that the electrons, the individual molecules have been stripped of some electrons. Maybe that's the nature of the imbalance, looking at one molecule at a time. But in that gas that's conducting electrical current, I think that is ionized. I think it is a plasma. And in that particular case, I don't know if there is a difference. N2XJN, K2IW in the TechNet.
Well, you're actually mixing apples with bananas, because I didn't say that what you said. I said that if the number of the electrons reduces, the element will have a positive charge. But if the number of electrons increases, the element becomes negatively charged. So now imagine that you have electric current. And you have a valence of electrons from the outer shell that are being lost, so they are being boundly, loosely bounded, but they are being lost, and they drift with the electric current. So now, what is the difference between the electric current flow through the copper and the ionized guy that is also an unstable atom? We're not talking about that ionized gas, ions are flowing in gas. We're talking about the difference between ions and electric current ions. In other words, if you have electric flow of a copper wire, you have uneven number of electrons and protons. If you have an ion, you have uneven number of electrons and protons. So what is the distinction in your term?
Speak English.
Yeah, waiting for the teeth, and I guess there isn't one. In the case of copper, we're hearing feedback from somewhere. Somebody's got a microphone key. In the case of copper, the electrons are so loosely bound to each individual copper molecule that they're floating around as a completely free cloud, so to speak. And so I apply an extremely small voltage on that copper wire, and those electrons flow immediately. The positive copper molecules stay in place. They're locked in a matrix. They're not moving. That is not a plasma. That is just a conductor. And yes, the electrons are flowing, and are we going to call them ionized? I don't think so. Those electrons in a copper wire are free to move, and they move, by the way, all by themselves, obvious by the fact that with no applied voltage, I can put a high-gain amplifier on that piece of copper wire, and I will measure radio noise proportional to the temperature of the copper. I aim my blowtorch at the piece of copper. The amount of radio noise I sense increases, and I never applied any voltage. So the nice thing about copper is that it doesn't hold onto its electrons very well. They float around. They make electronic noise proportional to the temperature, which really is the rate at which the copper molecules are shaking in place. So that is not a plasma. I'll admit that. And are we going to say the copper is ionized? I don't think so. I think that the natural state of copper is to have some very freely flowing electrons. I wonder if you agree with that, Wes. N2XJN, K2RIW.
Okay. Ion, by definition, is something that does not have an even number of electrons and protons. And in order for the electric current, on the other hand, to flow, you should not have even number of electrons and protons.
N2XJN disconnected W2KPQ.
I'm a little bit confused as to why the number of electrons and the number of positively charged particles has to be a different number, an uneven number. Why can't I create a spark inside a tube of gas, and by the fact that the spark exists, current is flowing, and if my spark has freed up, I'm going to be ridiculous here, if my spark has freed up 3 electrons, then there are 3 positively charged ions created at the exact same instant of time. Therefore, my 3 electrons in my example are going to move toward the positive terminal, and my 3 positively charged ions are going to move toward the negative terminal. And one's going to move faster than the other, but still, I can have a thoroughly even number of positive and negative charged particles in this ionized gas, and I could call that a plasma, and I could call it an ionized gas. Why must the number be uneven? N2XJN, K2LIW.
Also in copper,
West disconnected from Echolink. I don't know what happened on his end. He's probably going to try to get in. But I got a question for you with the plasma stuff. You told me about getting a spark in a cloud of gas. Is that what's happening at the end of a plasma cutter that they use for cutting large sheets of steel, you know, up to, I don't know, 2 inches thick or more? I know there's an electric, very, very bright electric current running at the end of many thousands of volts probably. And I've heard them say that they also feed that with some sort of gas to keep, I guess, the oxygen away or whatever while it's doing the cutting. But that plasma cutter, that process is at the end there now. Is that kind of what you're describing?
Yeah, there was a little bit of a double that time. And turns out that Rich was a little bit louder in voice than John. So therefore, we heard Rich, and I didn't quite hear what you said, John, but we'll give you a chance. And yes, that carbon arc cutter, or maybe the carbon arc, but the arc welder or arc cutter machine is creating an arc where the temperature is so high that you're vaporizing the material that you're cutting. That vaporized material, I think, is a plasma. It's an ionized material. And now, because the temperature is so high, because the current is flowing through that gaseous material that you're burning and cutting and melting, I think that is a plasma. I think that is an ionized gas. And I guess it is, you're literally boiling off the steel as at least a liquid, if not a gas. So whether the current is flowing through the arc that you and I are describing, similar to an arc lamp, or whether the current is flowing through a gas inside of a neon tube, in both cases, I think that's a plasma. Now, John, I think, was expressing something along these lines. Let's see what he was saying. KC2WGB, K2LAW in the TechNet.
K2WGB. Yes, Dick, I was just listening to Wesley about his copper wire. Don't forget, there's no ionization taking place in the conduction of copper wire. The electrons, if you believe in electron flow, are being replaced. So the atomic structure is balanced. There is no ionization in copper wire. And yes, I believe the same thing in plasma cutting. I think you're correct in that sense. So see if you agree with me on that, copper.
Deionized water doesn't conduct electricity.
N2XJN.
Somebody said ionized water doesn't conduct electricity. We'll get to that in a minute. Let's go back to the copper. One of my favorite puzzles is that I'm running my starter motor of my automobile, and on a cold morning, my starter motor will draw 200 amperes. And I got this very fat, wide copper braid coming out of the negative lead of the battery going over to the block of the automobile, and I got this other very large copper wire, probably double zero or whatever, the red lead going from the positive lead over to the starter motor. And so the question is, assuming now that I've I'm running the starter motor continuously, and it's drawing 200 amperes. And by some magic, I'm able to look at one electron coming out of the negative lead of the battery right now. That particular electron is red, where all the other electrons are blue. So I'm watching that red electron flow down the copper braid, and it's going over toward the block of the automobile. I make believe it's going on the lead over to the starter motor, except for a slight difference in length. The answer is almost the same. The question is, on average, how long does it take for that red electron to get from the battery to the starter motor when 200 amperes is being drawn? Let me drop. And this crazy puzzle has got more than one answer. From a electronic propagation point of view, at the instant I close the switch, assuming there was 3 feet of wire between the starter motor and the battery, and the speed of light is 1 nanosecond per foot, you could say that the battery knows that you closed the switch, the solenoid, at the starter motor in 3 nanoseconds. So in 3 nanoseconds, the battery knows you've done something. However, those electrons coming out of that battery, flowing into that copper wire, are like marbles in a pipe, and there's a tremendous number of them. When you go through the mathematics of how many free electrons are in that copper wire, the answer is how long does it take for the red electron to get there? The answer is 4 hours. Let me repeat that. 4 hours. In other words, if Mother Nature would let you create an imbalance, she doesn't. Every time you take one electron out of the far end of that wire, she insists that you're going to put an electron on the opposite end of that wire. She wants balance at all times. Let me drop. But if Mother Nature would let you drain, if Mother Nature would let you drain all of the free electrons that are in that copper wire, there's enough electrons there to supply 200 amperes for 4 solid hours. Does copper have a lot of free electrons? Does that puzzle give you an example of that? 200 amperes each, what is it now? 1.9 to 10 to the minus 19, 1 over, an ampere is 1 coulomb's worth of electrons flowing by 1 point at 1 second of time. So 10 to the minus 19 electrons times 200 amperes times the number of seconds in 4 hours. That's the total number of electrons there. I'm not sure what the big number is, but it's probably 10 to the 27th power. A lot of electrons. So electrons are really marbles in a pipe. And are you creating ionization when current is flowing through that copper wire? I think the answer is no. Now, when you put your hand across high voltage and you feel an electrical shock, are electrons flowing through your body? There, the answer is no. Those electrons flowing into the beginning of your skin create positive and negatively charged ions, and it's the ions flowing through your body, not pure electrons. In copper wire, electrons flow. Through a human being, ions flow. And maybe that's what the person who said ionized water is not electrons flow. And I think the answer is yes. Let's see. Wes, I think, wanted to make a comment first. And 2XJN, K2RIW, go ahead, Wes.
Okay. Now, what I was trying to say is that every element has a proton, neutron, and electron. So the number of protons is equal to atomic number, and the number of electrons is equal to number of protons. That's when nothing is ionized and the current doesn't flow. Now, when you are dealing with an atom, that means that you have uneven number of electrons also when you have a current flow. What is your distinction between ion and electron current flow in the copper?
Okay. That copper has such a large number of completely free electrons, that outer layer of electrons on each copper molecule, by some magic, they're very free. They're jumping all over the place before you apply a voltage. I can take that piece of copper wire, put it on a high-gain amplifier, and measure the noise of those freely moving electrons in that copper wire. It generates electronic noise proportional to temperature. And if I aim a blowtorch at that wire, the amount of electronic noise I get increases. So I don't even have to apply a voltage to make those electrons flow. They are that free. I don't have to ionize the copper molecules per se to make the current flow. It happens automatically. And by the way, when we talk about imbalance, I think I'm beginning to understand what you mean by imbalance. If I start off with a particular molecule where the number of protons and the number of electrons must equal each other, and it is the atomic number, and then if I do something to strip one of those electrons away from that molecule, the molecule now becomes, or the atom becomes imbalanced. Yes, he's lacking an electron, he picks up a positive charge, but the free moving electron is the exact same amount of negative charge. So if those electrons stay in that vial of stuff, and the protons and the rest of the atom stays there, as a total gas is balanced, but each individual molecule became unbalanced. I think I'd ask you what you're saying about imbalance. But the number of positively charged ions you created and the number of negatively charged electrons that went free, I think that is a balanced number. That was confusing me a little bit. N2XJS, H2LIW.
Impedance match to whatever resistance you've got for the copper wire
whatever resistance you've got for the tungsten wire, if you use enough wire so that you have a known amount of resistance, and if that amplifier is matched to that resistance, you will pick up an amount of radio noise that is identical. It's only a function of temperature. You tell me how much radio noise is coming out of that piece of tungsten wire. As long as I'm impedance matched to it, I will tell you exactly what temperature the tungsten wire is at. So the tungsten wire also creates radio noise before I put any voltage on it. N2XJN, K2LIW, I've done that.
Okay, N2XJN. Well, an electric current is a flow of electric charge. So in electric circuit, this charge is often carried by moving electrons in the wire. So in order for you to not find a way of about three electrons to explain that, I'm giving you the explanation. In order for the electron, for the electric current flow, you have to have a flow of an electron. Electrons are direct electrons that rip off of the atom. Therefore, each one of those atoms will have an even number of electrons and protons. So is ion. What is your distinction between two?
The only way that can stop, my imagination tells me, would be at absolute zero, it would be reduced substantially, if not totally disabled. So, yeah, I agree with it.
So anything that we call conductor has freely flowing electrons even before you apply voltage. That outer layer of electrons on those molecules of the thing called conductor are free to roam around any way they want to. And they do roam around in a very predictable magnitude of electronic noise that they generate, which is exactly proportional to temperature. And yes, that noise does go to zero if you go to 0 degrees Kelvin. And people have done that. I'll admit that you get some funny effects when you cross the temperature where you get superconducting. However, at the instant you get superconducting, your impedance match just disappeared to the amplifier. In order for this to really work, to really see the black body noise, the radio noise of a conductor, you must have an impedance match between that conductor and your amplifier. That sort of makes sense. By the same token, if there isn't an impedance match between my antenna and my radio amplifier, I don't pick up any radio signal per se. And the word impedance match is relative. A 2-to-1 or a 5-to-1 standing wave ratio is still a kind of match. It's not perfect, but it's a match. So if you want to measure electronic signals flowing, and if you want the system to be efficient, you're going to create an impedance match between the source of the signal and your amplifier that's picking it up. Now, therefore, is a conductor ionized when the electrons flow? I think the answer is no. Is that sort of what you're saying, Wes? And 2XJN, K2RIW.
Well, that is even more strange thing to do. You've got to keep in mind that the ionization does not mean that there is more negative charged electrons or more positive charged atomic nuclei or positive ions than before. The ionization only means that the electrons are positive ions and they are rather apart than they were in their original atomic structure, molecular structure. So the electrons have been stripped from the molecular structure of non-ionized air, then we say about air not being ionized. But the importance of this separation or stripping or distinction is that the electrons are now free to move much more easily than they could before the separation. So this ionized air also is known as plasma. Now, if then we're talking about change of the state only in diameter, and that will create ionization, then we have no significant distinction between electron flow or the electric current because you say it's being replaced by another one. Guess what? During that replacement, you have a heat. So based on the heat factor, you actually see the mass particle move. So then we have a mass particle move in ion and mass particle move in the current. Doesn't matter if there is a jiggling, wiggling, vibration, or spreading or subtracting, whatever it is. There is no significant distinction. That's what I'm trying to say.
Okay, we're getting onto something left-handedly, but we're finding something here. When we talk about things that are called conductors, by definition, I think we could say, a conductor automatically has a whole lot of free-flowing electrons, even before you apply a voltage. Everything called conductor has that characteristic. That's why we call it a conductor. Now let's talk about air and neon and other kinds of gases. Air, in general, is the world's best insulator. If I actually measure the amount of resistance, the resistivity of a block of air, it's a huge number in megohms, gigohms, teraohms. Air is an extremely good insulator until I reach the breakdown voltage. When I reach the breakdown voltage, that air becomes an extremely different substance. Some people will call it a plasma because it is now highly conductive, and that conductivity has a very strong negative resistance characteristic. In other words, as I increase the current through an arc in air, I call it a negative resistance because as I apply more current to that arc, the voltage drop across the arc decreases. If it was an ordinary resistor, more current means more voltage drop. In the case of an arc in air, it's a very negative resistance, nonlinear substance. That arc in air, I think, is a plasma. It's an extremely different substance with negative resistance. And now I have, for the first time, stripped electrons away from those air molecules when I made it conductive. I've created a brand new substance. It started off as the world's best insulator. And by the way, the resistance of air is fairly independent of humidity. And that requires a lot of explanation. But we won't go there right now. So the fact that air jumps into a brand new substance when I arc it over, that's another variable here that we're talking about, Bill West. N2XJN, K2LIW.
Okay, N2XJN. Well, what I believe is happening, what I believe, because I'm not really very much into John's explanation about the replacement. Okay, it may happen, but then you have a movement. One goes, one comes, you have a heat. You have a friction. You have a mass movement. But what I was trying to say is that often times, metals are referred as the positive atomic nucleus. They are surrounded by fluid-like clouds of electrons. And that makes metals good conductors of the electricity. And the ability of freedom of the electrons to move is what makes any material a good conductor of electricity. So those electrons have excellent mobility, allowing for the electrical current to flow. So it's plasma. So what I'm saying is, we have an ionization that prepares for plasma, it makes it more conductive than we have a plasma. So now we don't have a distinction. That's what I'm saying. We don't have a borderline that is very much like between Mexico and United States. It's a line. It's on a map. What I'm trying to say is that we have too many similarities. And direct there.
I just realized something else is going on here. And that is, you and I might use our car battery to produce a whole lot of electrons out of that negative lead, flowing down that copper wire, going to that starter motor. Real electrons are flowing in that copper wire, coming out of that battery. That battery is producing the electromagnetic force that you and I call 12 volts. Current is flowing through the battery because the battery is part of a closed circuit between the battery, the copper wire, and the starter motor. However, electrons are not flowing through the center of the battery. The current flowing in the battery is ionic current, not free electrons. Inside the battery, a whole lot of current is flowing, and it is not free electrons. It's ions flowing in that battery. So therefore, I think we have found what maybe John and I and you can agree is a case where ionic flow occurs, but it is not a plasma. I'm pretty sure that the current flow inside that battery is not a plasma, but ionic current is flowing, but it's not electrons. It's ions that are flowing through that battery. I wonder if that makes a little bit of sense. Let's see what John thinks on this one. KC2WGB, K2RIW. Go ahead, John.
Yes, Dick. Yeah, I'll concur with that. No electrons, ions, yes. Similar to water. Yeah, I think that's a good explanation. Well, by the way, you know, Wesley's claiming that the movement of electrons in a wire would cause heat, and yes, heat is developed in a wire depending on how much current you put through it. I think it's directly proportional. Back to you, Dick.
Yes, it's directly proportional, but it doesn't have to be a big number. If I've got a large enough copper conductor so that the resistance of the copper is a very low number, I can get a whole lot of current flowing through that copper with very little heat. And if I make the copper cold enough so that it becomes a superconductor, I could get a tremendous amount of current flowing through the copper with absolutely zero heat. So is the heat proportional to current yeah. If I don't change the diameter of the copper wire, if I don't change its resistance, I agree. In every real case, there is some heat flowing. And every time I double the current, I'll double the heat. However, I can have two conductors side by side, and I put 100 amps to each of them. One of them could have very little heat because it's got a very little resistance to it, because it's very wide, and one of them could have a lot of heat. So you and I know it's Ohm's law, and it's the voltage drop across the copper. So in the case of a wide enough chunk of copper, where the current flow is pretty large, but the voltage drop is very low, I got a lot of current flowing, but I'm not making very much heat. So does each molecule that I strip away from a copper wire, or from a copper atom, and replace it with another one, does each one create an equal amount of heat? I think the answer is no. Because, obviously, by the fact that I can make a lot of current flow in a very wide chunk of copper and create very little heat, and vice versa. So, current and number of electrons flowing is not necessarily proportional to heat. KC2WGB, K2LIW.
Disagree a little bit with that, Dick. I believe the volumetrics involved give you a more radiating surface, more electrons flowing. I think they're all equal in the heat that they generate with their motion, because mass and speed are about the same. Okay, but with the advantage of a greater surface area, that'll dissipate more heat. So that's only my opinion.
Hold on now, John. You and I know that the amount of heat is a function of watts. Volts times amps is watts. The voltage drop in the wire times the current flow creates a certain number of watts. If I make the wire wide enough, the voltage drop is very small, therefore I'm putting very few watts of dissipation into that wire. So current and heat is not proportional. Yeah, the wider piece of wire is a better heat dissipator, and you think you're going to see less temperature drop. However, when I make that piece of wire wider, not only is it better at dissipating heat, it's got less resistance, it's got less voltage drop, it's got less watts. So if I take your wide piece of wire and your narrow piece of wire, and I put each of them into a perfect calorimeter, and if I carefully adjust the current in each so that the watts dissipated in each are the same, now I will measure the same amount of temperature increase. So we're talking about wattage here. Heat is proportional to wattage. Heat is not necessarily proportional to current. You see where I'm going on that one, John? KC2WGB, KQIW.
Okay, then what you're saying is the effort of the electron is being divided among the group of electrons. That's the only other answer it could be.
Okay. If I make a piece of copper wide enough so that now a lot of current sharing is taking place of the adjacent copper molecules. But still, if I put 100 amperes through there, I know exactly how many electrons are flowing. As the piece of copper becomes wide enough, the resistance gets low enough, the voltage drop gets low enough, the wattage gets low enough, eventually I dissipate no heat, even though I've still got 100 amperes flowing. And I take that wide piece of copper with very little voltage drop, very little heat generated, I claim, you can put that into a calorimeter, and even though 100 amperes is flowing, you're going to measure very little current. So, as I see it, heat is proportional to watts. Heat is not necessarily proportional to current. Over to you, John. KQLIW.
Well, would we need an equal amount of joules to produce a certain amount of heat? So then, if we have a more massive effort of electrons, each one has to be dissipating less joules per function.
Yeah, where you flipped over from watts to joules, you're absolutely right. The amount of heat generated is joules, which is watts times seconds. But you and I at first thought that each electron we yank away from a copper molecule and it eventually gets placed with another electron, we thought that that transition makes a given amount of heat. good sounding common sense, but I think the answer is no. Obvious by the fact that if I use a wide enough chunk of copper, so if the resistance is low enough, so if the watts I'm generating for 100 amperes of current flow is very few watts, and therefore over time I've got very few joules, I'm going to make very little heat. So if I spread the grief wide enough, with a wide enough conductor, same amount of electrons, less heat overall, so each electron moving away from a copper molecule and being replaced, that is not the mechanism of heat being generated. You have to have a voltage drop to generate heat. If there was zero voltage drop, regardless of current, there is no heat. I can put 100 amperes through a superconductor. Lots of electrons are flowing. No heat is generated. Zero heat generated in a superconductor. Does that seem to make some sense, John? KC2WGB, K2RIW.
Absolutely,
that does make sense. Okay, so let's forget about the superconductor. Let's go back to copper. So now, if we're putting 100 watts through a 1-inch plus bar, or 100 watts through a number 18 wire, the coulombs per second are exactly the same, are they not?
I agree with that. Go right ahead.
Okay, so then we're not involving all of the electrons in the larger mass, evidently, because we have maintained the same Coulomb effect. There's the reason we're not generating the heat in a larger bar.
The larger bar for the same current, because it's got a less resistance, has less voltage drop. The watts generated is volts times amps in a DC circuit. And times time, that's joules. We have to look at voltage drop. Now, voltage drop is created by resistance. Resistance could be defined as the amount of impacts the electrons make when they flow through there. If I've got a piece of wire with a lot more resistance, that means the electrons don't flow through there so easily. That means they're bumping into things on the way, is one way of looking at it, and therefore the heat is being generated. The things they're bumping into that makes the heat is not necessarily copper molecules per se. Not easy to explain what resistance is, but without resistance, we ain't got heat, as I see it, John. Over to you, K2LAW.
Okay, the resistance is the opposition to the flow of that Coulomb effort. So we have less of that resistance in the larger bar. Now, there's the rub, and you're right, resistance is difficult to explain. So we have more area to apply it to. Are we reducing the quantity of electrons because they're not necessary to sustain the flow, as we're using a maximum number of electrons in the smaller conductor to maintain the same Coulomb rate?
Yep. The mechanism by which a wider conductor has less resistance and therefore generates less heat. It's as if the electrons flow slower and therefore on each impact there's something that's impeding their flow, creates less heat. But yet they still flow at the speed of light. We've used up our time. The machine is about to go off on 8.5 real soon. This was TechNet number 1492. We didn't settle everything tonight. I think we've created as much mystery as we created answers, John. But we'll be back next week to try to settle some of this. Over to you for other comments, John. KC2WGB, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Yes, Dick, I love it. We generate questions instead of answers sometimes. But we'll have this all resolved by next week. We'll have the answers to everything. But I want to thank everybody for participating and their perseverance trying to go through what we go through. But it's always a pleasure, and wish you well, Dick and Wes, and we'll pick it up again next week, KC2WGB.
That man promised we're going to have all the answers next week. I'm going to challenge him on that one. We're never going to have all the answers on anything. Bye-bye, you all. Hang in there. KC2RIW clear.
Well, the answer is we don't know, Dick.
Okay. So we're going to know more about what we don't know. We're going to get smarter and smarter about what we don't know. We're going to know less and less about more and more. And pretty soon we'll know a little bit of nothing about everything.
Okay, Dick. Talk to you next week or during the week, whatever. And have fun. And by the way, can you hit the Metrolink?
I might be able to. I'm not sure. Something I've got to go do, so I'm not going to be able to do it right now. Back to you, John.
Oh, no. Just wanted to know. Okay. I will talk to you soon. Wes, if you wish, we can go to Metro.
One, two, one, two. Okay. I give you some partial answer about the distinction between ions and electron flow. At first, when you're dealing with the ions, you're doing electroplating, let's say. You're moving four atoms with the free electrons. So ions with the free electrons movement is an ion flow. Electric current is only electron flow. Or wiggling, jiggling, whatever you want. So that's what I understand. Yes, John, I'm going to go back to our frequency and to XGN.
Okay, Wes. KC2 WGB. QS1.
Prior to that, after getting married.
but I'm up behind Sears, and used to be a Bob and Ken Ford dealership. I don't know if you remember that, but then after that it became a Best Buy, and that went out. Now it's some kind of Indian supermarket.
I didn't, there's a lot going on. I've been visiting there on my mom a couple of times a year. And, I remember, I usually make it go to a bagel bar. It's a big, exciting thing around there. And, we have most of my couple still live there. We're all kind of gathered all over the place. You know, I'm getting a couple more in to work on movies. Focus on everywhere. My location was far side of the Maniac Park.
KJUPS Mobile. Okay, that is. When we were house hunting, we actually looked at one of the houses over there off of, I guess it was Caniag Road, but behind there was a Public Works building. There was a development just went to that, and we had looked in there. We looked at a bunch of different places, so hope you finally settled on where we are now. So it's not bad. You know, it's pretty central localized as far as Nassau County is concerned. I did not go to the Higgsville schools. So growing up in Levittown, I went to Levittown schools, and then from 11th to 12th grade, I ended up going to Long Island Lutheran in Brookville, which is just a couple miles up the road. And if you remember where the Jericho Cider Mill is, or if you know where Jericho High School is, Long Island Lutheran is just a couple blocks north of that.
Trying to remember that. Some things I remember. You sound really good for the iPhone. I have the app on the iPhone. I've actually had it on my home for a while, but I've never had any success with it. And I today a program for the computer to download it. Here I am,
and it's great. I have the Android operating system. I've always had Motorola phones, and not always smartphones, but since I got smartphones, they all have Android operating, and it works really well. As far as the microphone, I'm using a Blue Parrot Bluetooth headset, which is really good noise-canceling qualities. I mean, right now I'm going down the road at 65 miles an hour in an 18-wheeler, and you probably don't hear anything else except my voice. Headset works good on a full charge. It'll last almost 12 hours of listening to it. I used to use a wired headset for a while that was not able to get the Bluetooth to work on both the transmitted audio and the received audio coming back. I think it was just a quirk within the phone and maybe the software. But with the latest version of Android, I think it's 4.4, I decided to try the Bluetooth headset again, and now it's working fine. So I'm wireless, which is pretty handy.
Yeah, it sounds great. I wonder how you transmit your key.
I wish I could do it with like a remote push to talk or even a button on the headset, but I have a long windshield mount, suction cup mount that holds the cell phone, and it's within reach of the steering wheel. I can actually keep my hand on the steering wheel and just kind of reach out with my pinky and tap it when I want to talk and then tap it again when it's time to stop. It works pretty well. So I was driving all over the country. The Echolink app has really been nice. I'm able to keep in touch with my friends back in New York, listen in and participate on the different nets. And, it worked out well. I could probably bring a 2-meter 440 radio in the truck, but putting antennas out on the mirrors, they tend to get broken off a lot, and I don't feel like going through that. So right now Echolink is works well.
Interesting. Sounds like a good choice when you think whether you have the phone, you have the ham radio. I wonder if there's a next accessory you get, so you can talk about it. Probably is somewhere. Also, I know